All right, this is Talk Is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, here on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kepw.org. Please support independent media. All right, so today what I got for you, KBOO has done this thing they're calling the Oregon News Project, and they've interviewed Secretary of State candidate Kim Thatcher. So I'm going to play you that, and let me just give you, I'm going to go straight through here, so let me give you the information now. The duties of the, her duties are Auditor of Public Accounts, Chief Elections Officer, Administrator of Public Records, and additionally in Oregon, she is the Oregon State Land Board, head of the Oregon State Land Board, for those of you doing forest activities, and the Oregon Sustainability Board. So she's a very important position. She's a Republican, not endorsing any candidates here. KBOO did an interview that's it's half hour. And then what I have for you, the Wow Hall is in danger of, those of you listening on independent media, on radioforall.net, etc., the Wow Hall is in danger of closing. So the members and friends of the Wow Hall have gotten together and gotten an election, and they've gotten some people, some good people elected to the board. So if you want to know more about that, it's on friendsofwowhall.org. And so what I'm going to play you after the Kim Thatcher is a tribal tech from 1995 at the Wow Hall, with an interview, a short interview with Gary Willis and Scott Henderson, the bassist and the guitarist. And the Tribal Tech is an example of why the Wow Hall is such an important venue. It's very hard to find venues that'll play jazz fusion bands because, you know, and my spiel on music, I'm not against necessarily Milli Vanilli and bubblegum pop and stuff like that, but it should be equal. You know, these guys in jazz fusion basically end up poor in the poorhouse for playing, and they're incredible musicians, and they end up in the poorhouse. So there should be some equality in music. So places, you know, like the Baked Potato in L.A., and I think they just closed the Catalina Bar and Grill. These were the only places, and there's only a few places in Chicago has closed many clubs. Jazz clubs in Chicago, I've heard, have closed down. And New York, there's the Bottom Line, and there's very few places for jazz fusion players to play. So this is why it's important to support the Wow Hall. So those of you who are not in town, and those of you in town, it's friendsofwowhall.org. If you go to friendsofwowhall.org, you can get a lot more information on that. So like I say, coming up, Kim Thatcher, Secretary of State candidate here, and then something you're not going to hear anywhere else, because it was recorded by yours truly at the Wow Hall in 1995, Tribal Tech, with a short interview with Scott Henderson and Gary Willis, fretless bass player Gary Willis. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. KEPW, LP 97.3 FM. Support independent media.
Running for Oregon Secretary of State. Ms. Thatcher, welcome.
Thank you.
Ms. Thatcher, I interviewed you in 2014. At that time, you represented House District 25, but you were running for the seat you currently hold, which is Senate District 13. Then I asked you why you wanted to move from the House to the Senate, and you said that was a good question. So 6 years later, I want to ask you, Why do you want to move out of the legislature and into the Secretary of State?
That is where most of my focus has been during my 16 years in the legislature, has been dealing directly with topics and commissions and committees and all that that deal with the Secretary of State's office. I have worked on the Legislative Audits Committee longer than anybody there. I've worked on the business issues that, especially getting the Small Business Advocate in place and advocating for that in 2011. And I've dealt with elections issues. That's been a topic that I've worked helping with securing our election, making sure we have a people-driven process, which has been kind of tricky because it seems like the legislature wants to whittle away at that and erode that right, the initiative and referendum process. And so it just makes sense for me, especially as a business owner that has run some pretty big projects and lots of moving parts and people that will translate well to running the Secretary of State's office, and also being able to run the corporation division and knowing what businesses are going through today.
You know, I'm curious about something. In Oregon's history, secretaries of state have become governor. The most recent example is our current governor, of course, Kate Brown, who was Secretary of State. And then Mr. Richardson, who became Secretary of State after running for governor, but then losing to John Kitzhaber. Do you want to be Oregon's governor eventually?
I am not looking to be Oregon's governor. I could only find three situations in Oregon history where a Secretary of State stopped being a Secretary of State and succeeded to the office of governor. And that was the most recent one being, of course, our current governor. But I'm prepared to be so if this rare combination of events happens. But that is not why I'm running for Secretary of State. I'm not looking to use it as a stepping stone to a higher office. I really would like to just serve as Secretary of State. And that is what I'm very much prepared to and equipped to do, and that's what I look forward to serving in.
When I interviewed former Secretary of State Richardson, I interviewed him twice, and he told me that although he was Republican, to some extent he felt like he was breaking with his party in that he wanted to execute the office in a nonpartisan way, not only in letter but in spirit. Other Republicans felt his achievement to Secretary of State was an opportunity to work toward turning the state redder. And so that makes me ask, how would you be different from your opponent, Shamia Fagan? The Secretary of State is an elected position, but as I mentioned, Mr. Richardson strived to treat it in a nonpartisan way. So what would you do differently in the way you would lead the office over the way your opponent might lead the office?
I admired the way Secretary of State Dennis Richardson handled this office and dealt with this office. He looked at it, and I also look at it, as mostly a managerial type of a position with what should be nonpartisan responsibilities. And I absolutely agree that is how the Secretary of State's office should be run. My opponent has Democrat for Secretary of State on her sign. She has mentioned in forums before that she thinks Oregon needs to have a Democrat Secretary of State in there. I just don't see this as, I am looking at using an independent commission for redistricting, honoring much of what was in Initiative Petition 57 that was not able to make it to the ballot due to the difficulties with COVID and all that. But there were a number of proposals, or a number of people, a wide breadth and spectrum of political views that were supporting this concept, everywhere from NAACP and the Taxpayer Association of Oregon, the League of Women Voters, and many others that were supporting the independent commission. I have said all along that I would support using that type of a commission in redistricting. I am not looking to sit with, a hand-picked group of people to look like it's going through a nonpartisan process when really it just, is not. It is somebody that wants to put their thumb on the scale as far as how our districts are drawn. I think that is a big difference between me and my opponent.
No, I've been watching ads from your opponent campaign committee, and I see that one promotes her and then one attacks you, but I've yet to see any type of ad from your campaign. You're a seasoned politician, and Ms. Fagan's ads have been running for weeks, and the election is a month away. Where are your campaign ads on television?
They are playing. I have a couple of different ads out right now. I don't have quite the war chest of money that she does with the six-digit, you know, handful of six-digit donors, but I do have ads running, and they are mostly in the Portland area right now, I believe. I don't know where all they're playing. I don't make the ad buys, but we do have a couple of ads running.
You know, so much of what happens, what's happening now, relates to our 2014 conversation. Back then, you called the session where the legislature was split evenly down the middle by party. You called that a fun session. But in conversation,
it was the best.
But in conversations I've had with candidates this year, as part of a candidate interview project I've been running, Democrats say they can't get anything done because Republicans are being obstructionists, while Republicans say Democrats and their supermajority mutes a lot of their concerns and they get steamrolled, which is why they walk out of session. The last few sessions seem to be anything but fun. What's that been like for you, and will you miss the lawmaking part if you become Secretary of State?
I absolutely agree with many of the sentiments expressed that it has not been fun, not fun at all. In fact, had voters been able to be given a chance to have their voices heard on some of these bills that they just wanted to block from them having a voice, you would not have seen the walkouts that you saw. You would not have seen the denial of quorum. You would have seen probably some bipartisan bill passing, you know, lawmaking. But there just was a concerted effort to try to block voters from their right to a referendum. They were being blocked from being able to call the question on legislative action and put it to a vote of the people. They were being blocked from getting information on even how much something like, you know, the cap and trade, for instance, was going to cost. So it was just kind of financial malpractice combined with blocking voters from being able to weigh in, and the ability of even able to look into the program once it passed. There was just, you know, a lot of non-transparency built into the bill where things would be hidden. There were situations where, well, I just really disagreed with the fact that they were blocking voters from being able to have their voices heard through the referendum.
Then in what way do you feel it was being interfered with?
Well, the referendum process is interfered with when when an emergency clause is added, and it's added for just for the reason to block people from weighing in, because it was a big question. It was going to be affecting a lot of people. It was going to be affecting the whole state, every man, woman, and child, every business, every your cost of living. Everything was going to be going up, and everything was going to be effective. Yet they put in an emergency clause to essentially make it so that it was passed upon signing by the governor, and that would have precluded the ability of voters to put it on the ballot through a referendum.
And just quickly, could you explain why the emergency clause has been a significant point of discussion and frustration for Republicans in the legislature?
Well, the emergency clause has been used for no other reason but to block voters from, referring what the legislature did to the ballot and calling the question, saying, hey, we don't agree with this as voters. Let's put it on the ballot and let's have a statewide vote on it. That has been blocked when they put the emergency clause on it. And there are a lot of bills that have an emergency clause on it where there's no problem. It's bipartisan. It is something pressing. It needs to pass before it lapses or there's a good reason for putting on an emergency clause. But there has been abuse of that. And that's what has been happening lately with the emergency clause, to purposely block voters from a referendum.
Oregon has a Democratic executive and a democratically dominated legislative branch. Do you think that puts any political pressure on the Secretary of State's office in terms of how it does its job, or actively hindering the vote in favor of one party or another?
Well, I think your original question was, if there's Democrats running the state, does that put pressure on a Secretary of state. I think that you need to have the Secretary of State. In Oregon, I don't know about other states. They all seem to have sort of a different job description. Ultimately, all deal with elections, but other than that, things can be a little bit different and varied among states. But in Oregon, the Secretary of State is the one check on the one-party management of the state right now, and it would be the one check and balance that would be out there to be able to evaluate performance and make recommendations to do things better, to make sure that we have the best processes in place, that we have a government working in the best way for people. And I think that when you have another, when you have a, well, my opponent, for instance, took $50,000 from the governor who runs the agencies that the Secretary of State would be authorized to audit. And to me, that seems like a bit of a conflict of interest and does not display, you know, an ability to, or an intent to hold that branch accountable. And that's what I think the Secretary of State should be doing.
If you lose your race, will you stay in the Senate?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of my second term in the Senate, and I have two more years to serve.
Okay. I just asked because I know that sometimes when candidates are running for office, if they don't win the race, they don't pursue re-election. So that's why I was asking.
No, I'm in the middle of my term, so.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you, back in 2014, you said, and I'm asking you this as a legislator now, you said that it didn't make sense that taxes were lowered for some industries but not others, and for the whole economy to get the benefit of increased tax revenue, all business should benefit from lower taxes. But as you know, there's a vaping and tobacco tax ballot measure this year, and there was a corporate tax measure that lost, you know, the last time. If businesses are trying to keep as much profit from their revenue as possible, isn't it their other mission to pay as little tax as possible? And how does that benefit the economy?
Well, they hopefully are using whatever the law says they can do in paying their taxes. The tax laws are written in such a way that they're very convoluted, very difficult to follow. And when you have bigger businesses, they have really expensive accountants that do work the system and make sure that they're paying as little as possible legally. Now, I'm not sure what you're asking there other than, I just feel like different industries should not get some sort of a benefit above and beyond another industry or different size business within an industry. There seems to be a lot of disparate treatment of businesses in our state, and I would rather see are simplified, and I would like it to be easier to pay. I mean, easier to figure out, and I think that would benefit our government. I think that would benefit the revenues that our government gets. The CAT tax is one example of another complicated tax. It's not just 0.57%. It's 0.57% of the lesser of two, you know, your revenue minus $1 million, but then minus whatever is more, whether it's your labor or your cost of goods sold. So it's not straightforward. It is convoluted, and I just think that doesn't help business. It doesn't help revenue generation for our government either.
When I talked to you back in 2014, you got pretty emotional when we got on the subject of how slow and sometimes frustrating our government can be. And you remembered your visit to China and how in one way it was good that they got things done quickly, but it was bad in the other way because people suffered as a result. And you implied that, you know, especially the way the United States is going right now, I'm thinking about it, you implied that the United States, with all of its problems, doesn't necessarily need to aspire to the efficiency of other countries that might move faster, but not necessarily better. Considering the way our government has been going through its ruminations over the last few years, do you still feel that way?
I do. I think that excuse me, for as messy as democracy is and our representative republic is, that it's one of the best ways, it's the best form of government that in the world. We may not be real efficient. We may have some divisions, but at the end of the day, I would much rather have that than an authoritarian, dictatorial, get or done type of state like China.
When I talked with other Secretary of States in 2016, I wasn't surprised that election officials defended their voting systems and procedures. But considering everything that's been happening since then, do you think that they have more reason, and would you as a Secretary of State feel there's more reason to defend them now? Like in Oregon, for instance, you know, is everything working the way you'd want it to if you had the job, or if you could make changes, what would they be? Because I'm assuming you've been following the operation of the Secretary of State and you have thoughts about what you would do if you became Secretary of State.
Well, I would like to look at the election system from top to bottom, from registering to vote, clear to certifying the election, making sure that we do have the best processes in place, that we have, we don't have any gaps where people or people who may not intend, who have no good intention, we can manipulate things or, you know, expose a weakness. I want to make sure that we don't have those weaknesses. I want to look at, you know, so whatever that reveals, whatever that sort of review shows is what I would like to change. But I would also like to change, the ORSTAR, which is Oregon's campaign contribution and expenditure reporting. It is very difficult to use, I think. It is not real user-friendly. It's difficult to follow the money. I think that would be something that we can improve and help help people follow the elections a little bit better. I would like to be able to get a more of an online, you know, a way of having some more voter engagement online. And I would also like to look at postmarks to accept those when, like Washington, up through election day, if a ballot has been put in the mail and it's postmarked by that, you know, by that day, then it should count. There are people in Oregon, or excuse me, county clerks in Oregon who would be more comfortable with allowing postmarks to count through the Saturday before the election day. And that's fine too. But just making sure that people also have the knowledge on how to get a ballot when they've been displaced. With the wildfires and thousands of mailboxes having been burned down, plus hundreds of miles of roads having been shut down, most of them are opening up, but still it's causing people to have to go out of their way to get places. And these people who have been displaced by wildfires don't necessarily know where they're going to be in order to change their address with the Secretary of State's office or the county clerk's office before October 13th. So there's that, and I think we should be allowing for better access to in-person voting opportunities for these people who have been displaced by wildfires, and also to get the information out in a more robust way so that they know how to get their ballot.
You've touched on several issues. You've touched on voter integrity and issues maybe involving election fraud. You've talked about the mail. So I have questions for those. So speaking of the mail, Postmaster DeJoy's order to remove some high-speed sorting machines from service has worried some over how votes are received or included in the final count. But he also told the National Association of Secretaries of State about 10 days ago that the post office sent a mailer to voters encouraging them to educate themselves on how to vote by mail. Some of the secretaries of state I talked to considered the mailer helpful,
Some of them considered it confusing since it wasn't really in line with the way that they educate their own voters. And I wanted to ask you, what do you know about Postmaster DeJoy's effort to help explain the voting process to voters with this mailer, and what do you think of it?
Well, I don't have a huge opinion. I remember seeing it in the mail, and I thought, huh, that's interesting. I didn't really analyze it that deeply. But I know that the county clerks in our state work very closely with the different, you know, the post offices and making sure that they're all set and that they are, coordinating on what is supposed to be happening with ballots. For instance, they don't forward ballots. Just because somebody changes their address with the post office doesn't mean their ballots will be forwarded. Their ballots only get forwarded if the person changes their address with the county clerk or the Secretary of State's office. So that's the only way.
Oregon and states with mail-in balloting have gotten a lot of attention, mostly negative, from the president, who seems to be against mail-in voting. From your perspective, what do you think his opposition is for mail-in voting, and do you share it? I mean, what do you think about Oregon's mail-in voting system?
I think Oregon has a pretty good process in place. I do think there's always room for improvement, and that's why I would like to look at the voting system top to bottom, look at all our processes, kind of look at it as a white hat hacker, if you will, just to kind of make sure that we don't have any vulnerabilities. And we do these. I think we should be doing these evaluations regularly. I think we should be doing an audit or spot check, random check of the voter list, making sure that we're, keeping up with that and keeping our list current. And I don't necessarily share the president's view on that, because I think Oregon does have a lot of safeguards in place that maybe other states do not have. I think that it would be not really great to force all states to adopt Oregon's way if they're not ready. I mean, if they choose to, absolutely. I think Oregon can serve as a good example of what, lessons that we've learned, things that will maybe help other states, and maybe they can even improve upon some of the things that Oregon has done. But I think that after my conversations with Secretary of State Dennis Richardson in looking at our elections and asking him and querying him as to what he thought of the system, I've never met anybody with more integrity. So I have to say that I will agree with him when he said that Oregon's vote by mail is a pretty good system. I mean, it's a good system, and to have other states look at Oregon is a good thing. But making other states adopt vote by mail, if they're not ready, it took us a couple of years to get up to speed. So I just think that it should be up to the state. Oregon can serve as a guide, and we have a good system.
With regards to the current COVID-19 pandemic, do you think that it's the Secretary of State's job to educate voters on how to protect themselves? I saw a report that said left-leaning voters tend to vote in advance by mail, and right-leaning voters tend to vote in person on Election Day.
Are you talking about nationwide or
no,
in Oregon?
In Oregon. Do you think that the Secretary of State's office has any kind of responsibility to encourage people to be as safe as possible when they vote?
I guess. I don't think that's their main responsibility. I think we all have had a lot of education on how to handle ourselves in this COVID situation. We're all told to wear masks and socially distance and wash our hands and, stay home if you're sick. I don't think that we're uninformed in that regard. But as far as polling places, the only polling places that we have are within county clerk's offices. I think ballot drop sites are a great way to vote. I would rather use a drop site than the mailbox, because at least I know my ballot's there. It's been received right there. And I'm not having to wait for it to go through a big process with the post office in order to arrive you know, eventually in the right place. And, yeah, I don't know. In Oregon, we're 100% mail-in ballot or drop-off ballot in that you drop off your ballot in a drop site. But a handful of people do still vote in person, and there may be good reasons for that. They may not be able to get the privacy they need at home. They may be getting pressure from other family members or household members to vote a certain way, and they're just thinking, no, I want to do this away from them, and I want to be there, and I want to drop it off right away and not have it in my possession so somebody can, you know, do something with it. Maybe they just feel safer doing that, protecting their vote. One of the most valuable things we possess is our vote.
You know, speaking of that, President Trump is repeating something to his voters he told them back in 2016, which is to watch the polling places to ensure there is no fraud. Back then, critics said he was just encouraging people to intimidate people not like them to not vote. And there was a recent incident in Virginia where some of President Trump's supporters tried to interfere with that state's early voting. What do you think Oregon is doing to help make that kind of watching of the polls unnecessary? Because, you know, some people would call that voter intimidation.
Voter intimidation doesn't belong in Oregon. We have a very decentralized voting process where we have basically 36 elections going on around our state and many, many drop boxes that has no place in anywhere as far as voting in our United States.
And this is my last question. Why should Oregonians vote for you for Secretary of State?
Well, I have a good combination of experience in both the public and the private sector, and all of it can relate to the Secretary of State's office. I've been working on these issues for a long, long time, and that would include being on the Public Records Advisory Council, trying to help make access to our public records easier. And I'm on the Transparency Commission, something I helped create back in 2009, reaching across the aisle and passing a bill to put our state checkbook online. And, you know, as a Republican, I know, and I'm very practiced with working across the aisle with other people and trying to get consensus on issues. So that's been a necessary skill to have as a Republican to get anything done in the state. That's what you have to do. I've been in the legislature 16 years. My opponent's only been in for 6. I've been a business owner for 28 years with many employees. And I don't think my opponent has that experience. So I've weathered economic storms in both the legislature and haven't had to make hard policy decisions and budget cuts and, you know, all kinds of things like that. I am looking at it as a nonpartisan race in that the Secretary of State has nonpartisan duties, and I commit to doing that. I commit to utilizing an independent commission for redistricting. I'm not just going to be sitting in a closet turning the state the color I want with a Sharpie.
I just want to touch on something you said. Do you think that you had said you're not going to be sitting in a closet turning the state the color you want with a Sharpie? Is that what you feel? Is that what you feel that your opponent would be doing?
Maybe not so directly, but I feel like she would be. She would put together a commission that has the appearance of being independent, but really it's kind of tilted her the way she would like it to go. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, Ms. Thatcher. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you.
I'm Don Merrill. I've been talking with Kim Thatcher. Ms. Thatcher is running for Oregon Secretary of State. Thanks for listening.
All right. KEPW, LP, 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks, independent community radio, also streaming online at kepw.org. All right, coming up right now is an interview I did in 1995 at the Weill Hall with Gary Willis and Scott Henderson of Tribal Tech, and then I'll play you some Tribal Tech recorded at the Weill Hall in 1995 by yours truly. You know, and this is why you need to support the Weill Hall, is because that's one of the few places you're going to see jazz fusion and other obscure group bans. So if you want to get involved in that, is friendsofthewowhall.org. If you want to keep up with what's going on with the Wow Hall, we need your support to keep the Wow Hall viable and going. So it's friendsofwowhall.org. And, you know, this is one of my first interviews. This is 95, so this is one of the first interviews I do. Little tip, don't ask a guitarist how they make their sound, how they get their sound, because it's a secret, okay? All right, so here's Gary Willis, Scott Henderson, Tribal Tech. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. KPW LP 97.3 FM. Support independent media. Okay, why isn't that playing? Well, I had it working earlier. That's okay, I got another... let me play the music for you first. Thank you.
effect.
Okay.
Cool. So, okay, Gary Willis, what do you like about the fretless bass? What is so special about the fretless bass?
I play it because after you hit the note, you can do something with it. Whereas a fretted is more like an organ. Once you hit it, it's dying away, or it's like a piano is dying away, and there's not a whole lot you can do with it. So
it's gone.
It's just more expressive. It has more subtleties to it.
Is it a lot harder to get a note out of it, or to get not, intonation?
Intonation is a lot. Yeah, it's the hardest thing about it. Yeah.
And I know you teach bass. You teach a friend of mine at BIT.
Mm-hmm. I don't teach at BIT anymore, but yeah, I probably did. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you enjoy teaching, or?
Yeah, it's something I kind of always done, and I've known like really great players that don't have the communication skills, you know, and I've known like not so good players that have really good communication skills, you know. So I've got a handle on how to get things across, you know. I don't know. That's why I enjoy it.
Well, do you learn from teaching yourself?
Yeah, I have to, you know, over the years it's caused me to like to rethink what I'm doing and just kind of get it more organized in my head so I can explain it to people better, you know, instead of just existing up there kind of in some undefined state, you know.
All right, cool. Yeah. I can't think of anything. Is there anything else you want to say about the bass?
Man, I don't know. I've never... It doesn't cross my mind, the bass.
What about the Lakers? Aren't you into, sports?
I was a Lakers fan for a while. I'm kind of into them now, but now they're doing a little better. But I've always been a Cowboys fan. Me and Kirk are from Texas. So I'm having fun.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, man.
Hey Scott, I work at I was a volunteer at the campus radio. Is there any comment you'd like to make? What is it about your tone, man? There's something different about your tone. Where do you get that?
I don't know, man. I guess it's just the combination of how I play and the amps I use. You know, everybody has their own individual sound. You know, and a lot of it's how you attack the strings and how your fingers are and the equipment. It's kind of a very multifaceted thing with a lot of variables.
You don't use twin Marshalls. I thought that was the big thing with guitars.
No, I just said, well, you know, we don't play really loud, so I don't need all that stuff. Okay. You know.
Who are your influences?
Too many, man.
Too many.
Too many. Some, you know, yeah, I like him. I like...
I hear some Jeff Beck.
Yeah, I like Jeff Beck, too. I like a lot of different guys, you know. It's so many. So many good ones.
No, but you're original, man. I don't know. You're also got your own thing going there.
Thanks a lot.
What about... what's your next gig?
Portland tomorrow night.
Portland tomorrow night. And what was your first one?
San Francisco.
San Francisco. So you didn't start in L.A.?
No. We'll end in L.A.
Oh, you'll end in L.A. Mm-hmm. That's where you're from?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
I'm a modern girl. I'm a girl. coming. Brought to you by the same motherfuckers that bring you Jesus Christ. Brought to you by the same people that give you the Fox Network. Brought to you by the same people that bring you George Bush. Somebody save us. Where are you, Jesus? Jesus, save us from your followers. 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 We're all going crazy here. Is there a sane person in the house? Where are the crazy people? Where are the crazy people?
You better be crazy.
Do you hear them, Jesus? Scream for Jesus.
At 97.3 FM and KEPW.org.
Thank you for listening to KEPWLP 97.3 FM, Peaceworks Community Radio in Eugene, Oregon, and streaming online at kepw.org.
Did you know you can get counseling without insurance? For more information, call the Center for Community Counseling at 541-344-0620. We are here for you.
Will you?